You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Joining me, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Mr. Texas, Mike Musselman. Gunner, what's up? How you doing on a Friday? Fired up?
Yeah.
Yo, okay. I know fired up.
Yeah.
You don't sound fired up.
Oh, yeah, I'm fired up.
We were talking. I had Montana Man on a little bit ago. And he was explaining in this discussion that the Navy's having about its issues, one of the things that you hear is, well, the CO of the ship doesn't want to tell the, you know, whatever squadron commander, the Desron commander, that he can't, you know, he can't fulfill his mission. And so I had him on to explain, when you're higher headquarters, you know everything that ship is doing, you know their readiness levels, or, you know, their maintenance levels, and so it's not like they don't know. And so anyway, so in the course of that, we got into a discussion about how you somehow or other gain control of the white line and the State Department guy's vehicle. How actually did you get control of the white line?
What are you talking about?
In Afghanistan.
Are you going to make me mad? Oh, okay.
In Afghanistan, you somehow or other, did it all go back to the piss bottle incident? And that you held that over him and then took his car and then took his internet?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, I preyed on him because he was just a weaker personality.
And so you preyed on him and took all of his stuff?
Yeah.
And also, hey,
nothing to do with his performance.
What
does that mean?
I'm just a predator. What? And then Schwartz said you had some kind of Humvee. You had a soft skin Humvee that you obtained at one point.
Oh, in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
Yeah, the vehicle wasn't allowed to go outside that compound, so I took it.
So you took it and made it your own?
Yeah, but I gave it. I think I gave it to Joe David and the guy that, because they had a longer walk than I did.
So you took something that wasn't yours and then gave it to somebody else?
Yeah, it was a gift. What?
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's,
yeah, I think I gave it to the EOD guys because, like I said, you know, they didn't allow them to go chow, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, every place they went wasn't a 20-minute walk, right?
Yeah, it wasn't. I think it was like a truck. Maybe it wasn't a Humvee. It was just like a regular truck. And I took it from the engineers. not the combat engineer guys, but the Corps of Engineer guys. They were civilians. They didn't need it.
Of course. And they were weak too, right?
Yeah, they were weak. They were really weak.
And so Mike was awesome.
Am I a bad guy for preying on these guys?
No, but you don't really prey on them. Mike makes friends with them, and then he like asks them questions. Hey, what do you guys use that truck for? In case we need to go anywhere. Well, you live right next door to the chow hall. And you work right here, and that's like a block away. Do you care if I use that thing? Oh, and they like Mike because he's a likable guy. No, here you go. And they make the one mistake. They give him the keys. I didn't know you wanted. Yo, you wanted it back? I didn't know that. So that means they've got to come looking for him, and then they've got to ask for it. And they tend not to do it. That's
no.
Awesome. And so then,
I don't think I ever gave anything back.
And then he gave it to somebody else. That is hilarious. What,
all right. I'm not greedy.
Not greedy. The anyway, no, it's just Schwartz is funny. He gave us a little class. He gave us a little hip pocket PME on branding cows, and that brands are registered, and yeah, it's a big deal.
Spin Doctor.
Yeah, he said
you register your brand. Yeah,
the branding inspection bureau. The Branding Bureau of Inspection, something like that. Anyway, that guy told him, like, yeah, you might have to take your cows back to Idaho, brand them, and then bring them back, and then re-register them here.
Right.
I told him, I said, yeah, that ain't happening. Okay, look, I don't know how this is going to happen, but those cows are not making a round trip just to get marked, okay? So, anyway, he said, yeah, that's what I was thinking. But I didn't say that to him. And I said, why not? He said, well, he's a buddy of mine. I said, is he a dick? And he said, well, no. I said, well, if you can't say that to him, then that means he's probably a dick.
Right.
He said, yeah, I think you're right. My instinct was to defend him because we're friends. All right. What's going on with you today? Anything exciting?
No, just chilling out, relaxing.
You're just relaxing. You've had a tough week, man. A lot of politics going on. Starting to wear on you? Starting to get you down?
Yeah, then me and the wife had date night last night.
Yeah, how was date night? Where'd you take her?
Oh, we went to Christina's.
Good?
Dude, I'm telling you. You show your ass up here one day. We're going to go to your dinner. And you know you're going to tell me?
What?
Man, I would eat here every day. I had braised short ribs on top of polenta with the gravy, you know, the sauce that I use.
Polenta, yeah.
And his polenta is like, it's I think it's a noodle, but it's so fine, but it's like mashed potatoes.
Right, you would mistake it.
Yeah, you'd mistake it for really good mashed potatoes, but it's better for you than mashed potatoes. But the braised short ribs, man, is if you don't like short ribs, you are not American. You are going to the island. But his short ribs, man, you can eat with you can eat them just by looking at them because they just fall apart when you mad dog them.
Explain to everybody what mad dog means.
Mad dog is when you give somebody a face, like, you give them this, like, you know, kind of, you just give them a face of, like, what are you doing? And then that's mad dog at somebody, and they're like, oh, I'm getting mad dog, I better stop what I'm doing. That's when your kid's getting his hand in the cookie jar, you get that stern look, and they pull their hand out real slow. You just mad dog them.
So when you when you mad dog the short ribs, they fall apart in your mouth?
Oh, yeah. Well, they just start falling apart when you reach in for them. They submit. So good, dude. And then Tina got a five cheese platter that had, oh my God, he makes his own chutney, dude. And it is the best you've ever had, Mac. I ain't kidding you, dude. And, he had this fig. He's got combinations of different things. So the one of the cheeses was a cranberry chipotle cheese made here locally. Another one is this Nubella something goat cheese, real mild, but made here. And then another one, another white cheese made here, a brie that's made here. And then this called firecracker cheddar made here. And then he's got this, I call it, Mexican bees. Bee honey, Mexican bee honey, because it's spicy. This honey is really spicy, and it's so good, dude. I mean, you can just squirt it in your mouth. It's so good. But it's spicy. You know what I'm talking about? Nice. You get that sweet in the heat.
Spicy.
You know, at the same time.
I know, but spicy honey?
Oh, so good, man.
What do you guys got? What are you doing down? What are you guys doing down in Texas, man? You guys got crazy stuff going on. Honey's supposed to be sweet.
We live life on the edge.
On the edge on the edge of the plate?
Yeah, you got the chutney, the savory, you got the fig, the sweet, you got this honey that's kind of the back and forth. And then mixed with the flavors of the cheese, and then this prosciutto that, oh, Oh, I mean,
I'm a huge fan.
I don't know what kind of pig.
To everybody,
man,
what
that pig's got a special place in my heart.
Place in my heart and my stomach. Have you always been this much of a foodie in your life, or have you kind of grown into it as you've gotten older?
No, I've always been a very, very particular person when it comes to my food.
And that's because
I've always been.
That's because your grandma?
No, that's just me. It's just the way I've always been. And you know, the problem is, I think it was after a time, it was the Marine Corps that did it to me, because, you know, going to different places, different worlds, different jobs abroad.
You get these different
cuisines.
No matter where the military takes you.
Hello?
But prosciutto, you know, if you don't, you know what prosciutto is?
Yes.
Do you know how prosciutto comes to be?
No, I don't want to know.
All
I know,
you know,
is that you can get it, and it, you know, depending on what you like and what your taste is. I had some recently that was made with
prosciutto's never cooked. It's never cooked.
Made, you know, it had red wine in it. It was absolutely delicious. Absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
And
You know, because so if you get really good prosciutto.
Well, explain to everybody what it is, because a lot of people don't know what
it is. Okay. So you take a ham hock, the leg part, the back leg of a pig. And then what they do is they dry cure it in a very controlled environment over many, many years.
Right.
So all of the muscles in all those tendons and all that stuff starts breaking down. And if you ever look at it, it's pretty gross, you know. But in its process of drying, but it's dried ham, and you can get them from different places. But one place that he gets it from is I want to say it's kind of the Emilia region of Italy and. Prosciutto, but when they dry it, there's not a lot of fat. You know, the fat breaks down over the time, so you get this really, really soft, tender, sweet, succulent meat. And then they fine it. It's super. It's shaved. I mean, like you can see through it. But and then you get prosciutto rolled up into little crowns, you know, along the plate, and. Oh man, that itself was a meal.
You know, and it's interesting because all these things developed, you know, before there was refrigeration. So all these different techniques of drying meat and then curing them, right, and hanging them. That's how the Italians preserved their beef, right? That's the way they stored it. And then all the different things.
In a salt brine.
Yeah,
right.
All the different things that they did, you know, they did culturally to, you know, to sustain themselves. And then they learned. Then they've taken it, and they've obviously over the course of time they made it taste very, very good. But it's I always find it very, very interesting that these things all come out of your culture and historically, you know, what you had, the lack of refrigeration, how you preserved food, and then how it was. I mean,
right.
The Poles do it God, what do they call sausage? What do the Poles call it? What do they call it, Mike?
What?
What do the Poles call sausage? They have a name for it.
Polish sausage?
They have their own word for it anyway. But the Poles do the same thing with like a thousand different variations of sausage, and it's absolutely delicious.
But Poles do it with like a, it's like a kielbasa though,
Right.
But it's like a Polski. Is it Polski kielbasa?
It might be.
No, that's Polish sausage.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kielbasa, right?
It's a different type of pulled kielbasa, yeah.
Right, right.
But everybody does it. You know, the Koreans did it with cabbage.
Right.
I mean, you get different nations that do these things.
We did it with hamburgers.
What?
We did it with hamburgers.
We never dry-cured. We didn't dry-cure hamburgers.
I know, but our hamburgers is kind of our contribution to international cuisine. You know?
That's not true, because if you look at it, hamburgers came from Hamburg, Germany.
Is that true?
I just said it.
Exactly. Which is why I might question it. What? Wait, who told you that? The Gunner did. The Gunner did. the latest variation, evidently, is Napa Man is vehemently denying that he wears Uggs. And so he asked the question.
Yes,
he
hamburger did come from Hamburg, Germany, by the way.
He asked the question, who said I was wearing Uggs? Gunner?
It's so funny. And I saw Rob said something, you know, he's like, I'm not going to listen to a guy that's like mini tire, ATV tires on a truck and wears Uggs.
You know what? And that's the important thing is it doesn't have to be true. You just need to say it in front of a large crowd and it just yell it loud.
Right.
And then everybody's like, yeah, that's the guy, you know, the guy from Napa that wears the Uggs and has the little tires on the big truck. That guy. Oh, yeah, I know him.
Yeah. Okay. While the inspiration for the hamburger did come from Hamburg, the sandwich concept was invented much later. In the 19th century, beef from German Hamburg cows was minced and combined with garlic, onions, and salt and pepper, then formed into patties without a bread or a bun to make a Hamburg steak.
Oh.
Okay, so the Americans took this Hamburg steak, and boy, we went on a limb and put bread on it. Come on.
That's not all we
There's
did.
There's nothing.
All right. We created the Big Boy, the Big Mac, the Whopper. Come on, give us credit.
We did great.
Right. The quarter pounder with cheese. Hello. Yeah.
And yeah. Not in France. In France, it's called?
What?
Le Royale with cheese, because they don't use the metric system.
Le Royale. I didn't know that. Okay, let me ask you this. Do you have
That's from Pulp Fiction.
Is it?
You know they call a quarter pounder and cheese? Yeah, remember? You know they call a quarter pounder and cheese in France or wherever he was at in Amsterdam?
Oh,
no,
God.
What? They call it Le Royale with cheese. And he's like, because they have the metric system. And then he comes back and says, what do they call a Big Mac? And he goes, Big Mac. They call it a Big Mac. That's a great. You never heard that? You don't remember that line?
I have, now that I think about it. I'll tell you, talk about a great movie.
Great lines.
Yeah.
With
awesome, awesome lines. In fact, that scene at the end, in the diner with Ringo when Samuel L. Jackson grabs his pistol and he's going to kill him. And he goes into this, it's this, you know, what I love about it is it goes from like absurd, stupid to intellectual. Now, Ringo,
right.
What's he say? I should kill you. You should be as dead as fried chicken right now. But I'm
something. Yeah.
But I'm in a vulnerable.
If you would have ran into me,
yeah,
you gotta don't bastardize it. You gotta find it now.
I'm in a vulnerable place. I'll find it. Hey, what is your thought? What is your thought on tattoos? There's a lot of anxiety in the military about tattoos. Do you share that anxiety? Are tattoos a big deal anymore?
No, I don't care.
Yeah.
I've never cared.
Yeah.
Doesn't bother me.
All right, here's a scene.
As long as you don't get them on your face,
yeah.
Your face and your neck, and they're in, like white supremacy or black, anything gang tattoos or,
right.
It doesn't bother me.
Okay.
It's your body.
All right, hold on. This is the senior enlisted advisor to President, yikes, to General Dunford.
What are they? Well, it's a general military tattoo. You know, I got a Ranger tab on one arm, and, I was the brigade sergeant major of the 4th Striker Brigade, 2nd Infantry Division, during the surge in Iraq in 07 and 08, where I lost 54 troops and had over 500 wounded, so I have a memorial tattoo to that. I lost my oldest brother on the 9th of June, 2003, and he was my idol, and everything that I looked up to be was my oldest brother, so I have a tattoo for him. And then I'm a career paratrooper, so I obviously have an airborne tattoo, you know, and all of my 82nd brothers know what I'm talking about there. And then obviously I have a tattoo that is dedicated to my wife, which I got when we were in the first year of marriage, and people were telling me that's a wrong tattoo to get because it's not going to happen. Well, here I am 35 years later, and, you know, the tattoo is fading, but our relationship is not.
How about that? Sergeant Major John Wayne Troxell. He's tatted up. You got no issue with it.
Yeah, I mean, why? Why is it a big concern?
I don't know. We spend a lot of time with it. Next question. Why the Air Force has made upgrades. The mother of all bombs is now 30,000 pounds. Delivered only by the B-2. Why are we so fascinated with that weapon? I won't say we, but why is the American public so fascinated with the mother of all bombs?
What's that? Why are we so fascinated with that?
Yeah, why is the American public loves that bomb, man? Of all the bombs in the world, they love the Moab. You say Moab, it's like it's on TV tonight. Any reason other than it's just a big-ass bomb?
No. I mean, that's it. I don't understand what the fascination is of something like that is.
I know. All right, next question. What's a bullpup rifle?
A bullpup rifle is when the feeding mechanism... okay. So, the before you answer it, what would be the... why would you have a bullpup in the first place? So, you describe what a bullpup provides you. If you, for instance, our rifle is what, 40 inches long?
Yes.
So you have, what you have in there is you have a barrel, a receiver, and a stock. But the barrel is only, you know, 18 inches long. So the rest of the gun is 22 inches, you know, when you start looking at. So what you do with the bullpup is you combine a fire action where the action is behind the trigger group. So where the bullet is being fed into the chamber sits behind the trigger group. So what you gain then is you don't need the same type of distance to perform the same kind of thing. So you can put an 18-inch barrel on a bullpup rifle and have basically, you know, 22 inches long gun instead of having a 40-inch long gun.
Got it.
So those are so really when you look at it, any kind of bullpup would be when the ammunition, the feeding mechanism sits behind the trigger group. So you get a longer barrel in the same amount of space. Or you can make it shorter, but you don't have to give up barrel length.
Okay, because of the location of the feeding mechanism, which is normally forward of the trigger, yes?
Yeah, it's always forward of the trigger group or right on top of the trigger group.
Right. So anything where the magazine is aft of the trigger is referred to as a bullpup.
Yeah, the feeding mechanism sits behind the trigger. Usually it's called a bullpup.
Yeah, did you notice where I threw aft in there as kind of a naval term?
Yeah.
All right, just checking.
So sniper rifles, some of the gas gun sniper rifles that are semi-automatic, 22, 24-inch barrels, but then they're bullpups, so the magazine sits right in the stock right underneath your arm. It wouldn't make any sense to make a bolt action bullpup because then the bolt sits behind, you know, and you gotta come out of the stock to actually do the mechanism. And it only works in like in a gas type situation.
Alright, I need your comments on a couple things. I've been meaning to ask you this for a couple days, probably since Wednesday. Upper out rules are going to get new scrutiny from Congress. based on demographics of recruiting, in that there's fewer and fewer people, the pool of those eligible to serve in the military is shrinking because too fat and all the rest of it, okay?
Drugs, yeah.
Exactly. So this whole concept of up or out and we can replace you is going to be looked at. I'm curious about your thoughts on that. You've served with other militaries that don't really have up or out rules. You can go to whatever level you're competent at, and you can stay there. And you've also been a recruiter. Do we need up or out? Is that a good thing?
Yeah, we. You're going to put me in a position where you're going to make me say something.
What?
But the Marine Corps, the up or out works. You know, and it has to stay. And it people will see that it's unfair, but, you know, the military is not a job corps. We're not designed to give you a job and keep you employed. Your performance does that. So,
okay, so let me give you the case, and I know what you're going to say, but I just want to make the argument in front of everybody. I've never served with them to observe this, but I've gone to school with British officers who talk about, yeah, we don't have that. If you want to be a Lance Corporal and you're a good Lance Corporal and you're
that's different.
Okay, so you can stay as a Lance Corporal and you don't need to be promoted and you can stay there for as long as you want to.
You're talking about a different piece here.
Okay, then explain to me the difference.
The difference is, they also don't have A billets and B billets. We have nothing but, they have nothing but A billets. So if they have a recruiter, that's his job. That's what he wants to do. He recruits. It's all he does. All he'll ever do. If you want to be a machine gunner, that's what you want to do. That's what you want to do. You don't have to do anything else ever. You can always be a machine gunner.
Really? They never rotate between jobs?
No, most of the time, no. You have to volunteer for it. If you don't want to, you don't have to move around. In some very small cases, yeah, they take people, but it's always on a volunteer basis.
Interesting. Okay, so now, okay.
And because of the numbers, the sheer numbers, you know, they don't, not like us, where, you know, you look at, like, MSG, Mac, you know, other than provide some kind of, I don't know, toy soldier in a glass case type scenario, there's no real reason other than we've always done it. Well, you know what? Before we were in MSGs, we were always on ships. And guess what? We're never on ships.
Right, anymore. Yeah, we stopped doing that.
So, you know, this whole, just because we've always done it, or it's just that when you walk in the embassy, you always feel secure than the Marines in there. No, you don't. You feel secure because there's only like 8 of those guys. You know, what are those 8 going to do when there's 600 people, you know, with armed weapons coming in? They're going to burn and destroy classified information. They're going to secure areas, you know, and do that kind of stuff. And they're going to assist with an evacuation or anything like that.
Or if the effort's large enough, they're going to get blindfolded and take it hostage if they're not killed, like happened in Iran, right, when they overran the embassy.
Right. They're not there to defend the embassy. But you look at different... I always said, hey, recruiters... You know, make recruiting a permanent job. Recruiters before, when I was a recruiter, when recruit guys would say they're going to become recruiters, I'd look at them like disgusted. And, but then you know what? No, you know what? That's great. And if there was more of them, and if there was always a recruiter, and we'd never had to go to recruiting duty, oh, what a better world we'd be in. But when you do other jobs, you know, it's just, yeah, I don't see the same correlation when it comes to people saying, well, you know, we would never do that because we don't want to move up. Well, you don't have to move up. When you're that small and you're that specialized and everybody's doing one special thing, we have this thing that we believe in the Marine Corps that everybody's got to get diversified. Everybody's got to know each other's job. Shit, most of the time they don't even know their own job, much less trying to, you know, someone else's job. The thing with the leadership, though, is we got to do something with the leadership. When we identify young people that have potential to serve in the leadership roles, we need to groom that. You know, we need to bring that out into the fold. And they do a lot of that, you know, at TBS and I, or TBS and OCS, where they start grooming people. And, you know, some of the best guys, you know, that serve in the Marine Corps, and sorry, Rudy, but some of the best guys that serve in the Marine Corps are infantry officers. Those are the best. And yeah, there are some really great other MOSs, but there's not the same sheer number of them. So if you're taking 100 infantry officers, I would bet it's best to say there's probably about 70 great dudes in there. Whereas you're taking, 100 aviators, there's probably, 20 great dudes in there. Not to say they're not smart. They're all very intelligent. But when it comes to personality and leadership and abilities and everything else, there you find more in the infantry than you do anywhere else.
All right, talk to me about how does it lay that down on the enlisted population then, in terms of...
The problem is, in the enlisted population, it's never really found out. We just promote people based on scores, that you took more time to go to class or cutting, you did some webinars, type things, you did this, or you just, you memorize things and you can answer, like, what's the hemline on a skirt? Oh, 1 inch above the knee. You're promoted. That's not leadership, And when we do identify leadership, what can a commander do? You can't just say, I'm going to give you a battlefield commission to sergeant. There's no such thing. So we don't do a good job identifying our leadership with our young Marines, our enlisted population, until it's a little too late. And then, again, the better ones gravitate towards the smarter ones and the more fit ones and the ones that are more disciplined and more driven. They tend to go towards, your scout snipers, your reconnaissance, your force reconnaissance, your MARSOC entities, things like that, because that's what they enlisted for, that excitement, that, that's what they want to be. They want to be the guy that,
right.
Yeah. And so, and if you look at a MARSOC special, a special operator in a MARSOC unit, you can have a platoon of master sergeants. You can have a squad of master sergeants in a MARSOC unit, and there's no problem with that. So, or you look at Delta's formation, or, you look at, things like that, Still Team 6 or any other, foreign or any kind of special forces tier one organization, you have a really higher end of more senior dudes.
Right.
Chiefs and first classes. So you got a basically a troop of nothing but staff sergeants and gunnies and first sergeants. That's a pretty stout organization when, your smallest group of a six-man team comprised the lowest ranking rank is a staff sergeant.
But on the, in the general force, so Marine Corps is 60% under the age of 26, 25. Okay. It also turns over, about 60% of the force every 3 years. Okay. So the Marine Corps skews being younger and being, more inexperienced. How does this, first of all, do you think the Marine Corps, who has consistently met, in this year, last fiscal year, evidently exceeded recruiting goals, does the Marine Corps need this, given our supply and demand? Or
no, kids are driven, and I'll speak from here. The JRTC unit here at the high school is a Marine Corps JRTC unit, and they are stellar. If you were to see these kids walking around in their uniforms, you'd have to snap twice and realize that they're high school kids, because they act, everything about them looks, in the way they act and the way they talk, as if they were young, disciplined Marines. And these are not the 10%ers of your squad. These are the kids that are going to be, meritorious promoted. And most of these kids, these JRTC guys, go on to college, and do great things. They have a great success rate. because of the values that are instilled in them by Lieutenant Colonel Casey, and he's basically what they call the AMY, or the, it's kind of like the
MOI.
Not AMY, or
right. No.
Yeah, MOI, Marine Officer Instructor.
Right.
And, you know, the things and the values, everything that's distilled in them, these guys want to be Marines because, and that's the way they look at it, is you want to do something important, be a Marine. Or you talk to kids and they're like, well, what are you going to do? I'm going to join the Army. Oh, you're going to do the Army. I'm going to be a Ranger. Why don't you just be a regular Army man? Army soldier. Nah. I want to be a Ranger. I want to be better. So everybody has a perception of what's better. And so when you talk to people, or, you know, and I run into guys all the time and they're like, you know, oh, you served? I said, yeah, thank you for service. You know, oh yeah, you served too? Yeah, I only did, you know, 4 years. And I'm like, oh no, that's great. You know, and they're like, yeah, but I was in the, and then they like, well, I was in this or that. And I'm like, that's fine. No, you know what? And then, or they always come back with, the one thing you, as a Marine, you never hear a Marine say, oh, you know what? I almost became a soldier. Well, you know what? I almost became a sailor. Oh, you know what? I almost became an airman. No. But what you always hear is, you know what? I was thinking about joining the Marine Corps, but, you know, I don't know. And then I joined this. Or I didn't make it as Marine, so then I became that.
Audie Murphy's story. Marine Corps rejected him.
Yeah.
And join the Army.
Yeah, the Marine Corps rejects the guy. And there's the guy that would have, who knows if he would have done the same thing.
Right.
I always say, you know, he had the mentality of a Marine. He goes into normal population, so now he excels. So,
if
he would have been a Marine, he probably just would have been an average Joe.
It is interesting. It is interesting that, you do hear that all the time. So you don't think that the Marine Corps needs to look at up or out because of
we do up or out.
But what they're talking about is modifying up or out in terms of,
don't touch it. It's not broken, guys.
Congress is
monkeying with it.
Congress is saying, hey, look, the demographics of manpower are changing, smaller pools, and I guess the other piece is there's declining. I did this little science project the other day on my own, and because I saw a number in terms of percentage of people on active duty from a state, and I thought, can that be true? And so I went and I downloaded all the numbers. And then went and got state populations, and I did this little science project. Okay, so I'm going to give you a quiz. Give me the top three, give me the top four states in terms of numbers of people on active duty. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay. All right.
It's like Family Feud.
Well, in number one?
Yes. Number one?
California,
yes. Number two?
Well, and the only reason is population.
Population 39,700. So 30.
Yeah, who's got the most people?
40,
California.
Okay, 40 million. California. All right. Who's number two?
Texas.
Texas is number two. Who's number three?
New York.
North Carolina.
Okay, North Carolina.
Who's number four?
Florida.
Virginia. Florida's, no, you were close. Florida's number five. Okay, and yeah. It's interesting because in one of the articles I've read here in the last month, it said more and more defense of the nation is a family business in which you have multiple family members joining the military. And it is a small number of families that defend the nation around the country. And so I had that in the back of my head when I looked at this. And what you have in California is you have a huge number of military retirees. Texas has huge, huge army bases. Fort Bliss, right?
Fort Hood.
Fort Hood. I mean, some of the biggest Army bases in the country are in Texas, and they've got a huge veteran population down there. North Carolina, the home of Camp Lejeune, the home of Fort Bragg, right? The home of the Rangers, right? Virginia, right? AP Hill, Belvoir, you know, right outside the Beltway, the Pentagon, Quantico, all of that were major families. Florida, a ton of military retirees down there, as well as the Navy presence down there. Georgia, right? Marine Corps Base Albany, Fort Benning, right? And so all those are indicative of service. What was interesting, though, Mike, is, and then I said, well, in what states do the highest percentage of people serve? And I thought this is pretty interesting. Top five are number one in terms of percentage of the population that's either on active duty or in the reserve. Number one is Hawaii. 3.5% of the population serves in Hawaii. In Alaska, 3.3% of the population serves. Number three, the District of Columbia.
Yeah, but now you're talking about smaller population states.
Okay, all right. Number,
you're counting like National Guard troops.
Okay, number four. That's right. I'm just saying that they serve. Number four is North Dakota. The first large state that pops in is Virginia. The second large state is North Carolina, and the third large state that pops in really is Kansas. Okay, but what I found even more interesting was the states that have very, very low populations that in terms of percentage. These are the next to the bottom, and it goes from 0.49 Idaho and California to West Virginia, Arizona, Florida, New Hampshire, Iowa, Maine, Minnesota, Illinois, Connecticut, Tennessee, Indiana. And now you're talking about when you get down to these numbers, you're less than 0.3% of the population serves. Ohio, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and the state of New York. Last at 0.17 is the state of Michigan. So it's just the demographics of who serves around the country and this focus on, you know, my family's one of them, right? Right. Both my sons are in the military and it's a family business in a way service. And, there's more and more of that around the country though. I just thought that the article, given what was in my head about the way the Brits do it and that you can be, you know, if you're a good private, you can stay in the British Army and you can be a private and they don't force you out. And then just how that would lay down, especially on the enlisted community of the United States Armed Forces.
Right.
So, interesting. The Commandant saying we need to relearn a couple skills for the war, the upcoming war with the near peer. One is land nav. Two is old-style communication. Because our shit is going to get zapped.
Yeah, that's true. They have the capability.
And a near peer, we're not going to operate in the permissive environment where we're able to rely on the digital communications that we've used over the course of the last 17 years. Pretty interesting. So the Commandant continues to talk about, he made some comments. He was up in Norway, and the President got asked about him. And he continued, these were made in comment, you know, that a war in North Korea is not going to go according to plan. And there's going to be certain things we're used to that are going to be taken away from us, and we need to be prepared for that. So the Commandant continues to beat the drum that we're going to war. So anyway, do you think we're going to war?
I don't know. Do I think we're going to war and give you, like, what, 2 years?
Yes.
No. I think we'll be in another type of war. But I don't know when.
Right.
You know, depending on crazy, both crazies actually, we'll see.
What about the what about this weekend? You got any big plans? You going back on the campaign trail now that you've rested up and gone out to dinner?
Yeah, next week is back on it again, as we got the debate coming up for the judges.
You seem to enjoy that, though, in conversations with you.
I enjoy it, but then there's times where, you know, like I see things that need to be changed. So
right.
It forces me. It's putting me in a corner where I don't like, because now I'm like, I know about it. And people that are in, that make it aware to me, they're behind, you know, like, well, when are you going to run, Mike? And I'm like, I don't really want to.
You should, though.
Too much work.
Did it? Well, campaigning sucks. Actually, meeting people is good.
And I can do that. And I'm a very, on the fly.
You'd be great at it. Here's the thing that I didn't like. I don't like it when it gets to the point that people start lying about you. And that's, I thought that the truth matters. I thought that, that we're all supposed to be here. And when you see it, and you know they're lying, and they do it anyway, and then the newspaper prints it, and you're like, wait a minute, why would you print that shit? You know, he said it about me, why didn't you come ask me? And then you realize, well, the newspaper's got an agenda too. Oh,
right.
I see how, this is how politics gets played, and we're only talking at a very, very low level. To me, it made my blood boil.
Well, you know, and like here in this town, you'd have to step very lightly if you're going to go after, you know, I'm not saying me, but anybody that has a service record of serving, you know, 31 years in the military. And
right.
If you're a decorated guy and you did, you'd have to be careful with your words. You know, no one come out and say, well, what has he done for, excuse me? Oh yeah, but other than what did you do yesterday? So
I'm with you, but let me just tell you, all it takes is a newspaper that's tied in with a politician that wants to see either the status quo maintained or thinks that you might threaten it, because you become the vote that takes the council from this side of the ledger to this side of the ledger, and so to me it was a very interesting eye-opening experience, and I think you ought to run for something.
And we had some really good people. We had some people that won city council. We got rid of two incumbents that needed to go. They were horrible. When you're a city politician and the only thing that you can say is, look what I've done. I'm the greatest person. If it wasn't for me, the city, you know, and that's, we had one of them in her campaign. That's what she said when she was running again. You know, it was like, I just want everybody to understand what I've done for the city. Here's me, and this is what I've done. And, you know, it's like, and we had a lake drought just prior to me moving here. The lake was really low. And then we had those record storms that came in and filled the lake. I mean, we had 22 feet of rain, in a month.
I remember that.
I mean, it was insane. And so she's sitting there talking about how she's the one that basically got the water back in the lake. And finally, this older lady in the church, Christian, she said, raise your hand. Yes, ma'am. She goes, you don't think God had anything to do with it? And everybody cracked up. Like, how can you sit here and say that you were responsible for, you know, the water going back in the lake? What? How insane. How stupid can you be?
Politics, though, right?
Yeah, they just start believing. You know, and she's like, but I was on the bus every day going to Austin to fight for the rights of this lake and everything. And it's like, okay, you may have gotten on the bus, and yes, you may have driven to Austin, and yes, you may have walked in there, but nothing got accomplished. They never listened to you because you're a blowhard.
And I would venture to say, with 22 inches of rain, everything filling up, okay? Even things you don't want, even things you don't want filled up, are filling up anyway. But you know, Mike, that's the part of politics, though, that is
24 feet.
Oh, 24. Yikes. Yeah. Things you don't want filling up with rain are filling up with rain. with 24 yeah. feet of rain. The but that's the part that I didn't, and I had people talk to me because I got elected when we were in Fallujah, right? And then
right.
and then I had people approach me from each party, right, and say, "Hey, are you interested in running for state office?" And I said, "Hey, look, I've never been involved in politics, so I just want to." And I found it at the end. I found it so distasteful. I was happy to go to Afghanistan, where things are
right.
things are more clear. You know, it's just the
well, you know who the bad guys are at.
Yeah,
where they're at.
At least most of them, right? And then they're not wearing uniforms, but it's sure as hell a lot clearer than city politics and politics in general. And I was talking earlier today. Imagine this. You know, the big story about the president about wanting to fire Bob Mueller. Can you imagine if guys walked out of staff meetings and went to the media and said, "Wow, you should hear what General Mattis said in that staff meeting today." You know? I mean,
yeah.
When you're in a closed meeting in a small group, you should hear this stuff. People get pissed and you're arguing and the shit they say. And for aides and whatever to roll out and call up news outlets and say, "Hey, blah, 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 blah." No shit, he wanted him fired. You know? He
right.
was pissed. Right? But I just think it's less than manly, if you will.
Well, this whole
it's so chicken
the whole
shit
politics scene right now.
Yeah,
is,
but
so,
it,
yeah, it's
yeah.
so chicken shit.
Yeah, it is. It is. And so to me, that's the part that, you know, God bless guys like what Tom Cotton's an Army veteran. There are all these different Army veterans, and there's more veterans in Congress now than we've had in a long time. But you got to have a tough stomach, and I didn't. I didn't. It made me angry, and I didn't like it. And I was encouraged, like, "Hey, Mac, you know, you with your background in the military and your deployments." And,
oh, you know who's on right now?
Who?
Darrell Issa's on Fox News.
What's he talking about? Oh.
I don't know. Let's see.
But I think I think you should run. I got an email, and then I'll let you go.
Okay, go.
Mac, has the gunner ever seen the snake beheading and snake blood drinking that they did for Secretary Mattis earlier this week in Indonesia? Mike?
No. What?
Evidently, there was a ceremony, and there's pictures of it. So Secretary of Defense is in Malaysia, right? Indonesia, all right? Indonesian Special Forces concluded an elaborate military demonstration by guzzling cobra blood.
Really?
The real showstopper came when camouflage-streaked soldiers wrangled various snakes, including king cobras, severed their heads with knives, and drank blood on the steps of the headquarters building. At least one soldier bit into the snake's head as its tail whipped and curled, and the troops belted war cries. He then knelt as a fellow soldier squeezed the blood into his mouth from another snake. Mattis clapped and grinned widely at the spectacle.
I bet he's going crazy.
He loves. Are you kidding? He loves that shit. Oh
yeah.
My god! So if you've never, I take it you've never seen that one.
No, I've never seen that one.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Darrell Issa was talking about this whole House Judiciary Committee and everything. How stupid this is! He's a stand-up guy, man. If you ever met Darrell Issa, I met him a few times.
He's Camp Pendleton. He's Camp Pendleton, right?
Yeah, he's got he's the Republican congressman for that district.
You know what? You know who I interviewed last night? And it'll be on next week, but I interviewed a guy named Jerry Joes. I don't know if you've met him. He's the president of the 1st Marine Division Association. He's an above-the-knee double amputee from Vietnam. And what an awesome guy. And one of the things he said was, and I mentioned Elizabeth Smart to him after he said it. He said, "You know, I've never been bitter about what happened to me." He said, "The guys who really got it bad were the guys who were killed." He said, "And my dad was an amputee from a industrial accident. And so when I never batted an eye, I'm not bitter at the government. I'm not bitter at the war in Vietnam. My life was going to be different, and I know that. And I've gone on about my life. And so we had a discussion about where does that come from? Where does that come from? Because there's so many people that, you know, that get so angry.
Well, it comes from your values of the family and as an individual growing up.
Right. That's what he said. He said,
it's what you see and absorb of society.
He said, what I had, or the example that I had in my house with my father, he said, I knew the way ahead for me. But just an awesome guy. The 77th anniversary of the 1st Marine Division is going to be celebrated next Friday. They'll rededicate the division colors.
The battle colors.
And which is very cool. You see a lot of veterans out there and that whole ceremony. So very cool. So they'll be down here. So I'm hoping to get out to that. But anyway.
You're going to get out there?
I'm going to try. My sister's going to be in Sacramento.
It's only like 20, 30 minutes.
No, but I'm supposed to go to Sacramento. So I'd have to tape all of this and then go to Pendleton and then drive to Sacramento, I might do.
Send your UGG-wearing field reporter there and take a photograph.
No, I'm going to do my best to attend. Because, you know Mike Frazier, former CO of 11th Marine.
Oh, yeah.
Mike
Frazier.
Frazier's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. Whenever you see him, tell him I always say hi.
I will. Mike Frazier was a colonel. He was the chief of staff of the MEB. And there's guys who are really comfortable being in charge, and Frazier's one of those guys. And we're having a staff meeting. And it's like, so you go around the table. All right, one, what do you got? He's the chief of staff. And, the one goes on about whatever they have. Two, he looks at the guy. He goes, two, if your shit is as weak as his shit, I'm going to shut you off in about 5 seconds. So you better have game. And it was awesome. It was like old-time Marine Corps where nobody sat and listened to you go, wah. It's like when you start to do that, somebody looked at you and said, okay, shut up. Anything else? No. Okay. All right, three. He just did this comedy routine around the table. And it was awesome. And you know the other thing it did? It shortened the meeting by about 45 minutes.
Well, it gets the important shit out there.
Right. And he used his sense of humor and busted balls on people in public. It was hilarious. It was hilarious. But Mike Frazier emailed me and goes, hey, loser, you going to come down here or you going to blow me off again? I'm like, oh, really? That's how we're mentoring?
Frazier said that.
Yeah, that's how we're mentoring young officers. He's like, you're not young. You're not even an officer anymore. I'm like, oh, okay. All right, asshole. So, no, I'm going to try to get down there and have lunch with him. So, anyway. All right, man.
Yeah, like I said, tell him I said hi. Give me a call sometime if he gets down here.
You know what? I'll do that. All right, man. Yeah, have a good
Frazier's
weekend.
A good dude.
No, he's funny.
All right, I'm sure.
He's funny. Mike Frazier and I first crossed paths. He was CO of either 311 or 211 in 2004. And I don't know if Mike was around for this, but we moved these generators from Jordan into Baghdad. They were called the MOAG, Mother of All Generators. These things were monstrosities. They could go between like 11 and 15 miles an hour. And they did that from Jordan into Baghdad. And the night before they went.
Well, they can run a city, yeah.
Yeah, the night before they went into Baghdad, he calls, and I've been working on this thing in Kern Ops, and I'm talking to him, and he says, hey, can I talk to the chief? So I go get Colonel Dunford. Dunford comes out, and he's like, no, Mike, look, Max says it was going to go, these generators were going to go across the Tartar Canal, not on Route Mobile, which is a major interstate, but on a different route. And Frazier's like, these things are going to go into the river. They're going to go in the canal. I said, Mike, engineers surveyed this shit. If they go in the canal, get a camera out and videotape it. And he starts laughing. He goes, that's what you want me to do? I said, look, the engineers surveyed the route. You're not a route engineer, are you? What was your major in college? He said, English? I said, okay, you're not qualified, right? He goes, Mac, you're being a dick. I said, no, get your camera out. And he starts laughing. He goes, all right, let me talk to the chief. So then Dunford talks to him, and he hands it back. He goes, you know what, Mac, you know what I do a lot of around here? I said, what's that, sir? He said, hand-holding. I said, what was that? He said, well, Frazier was just sparring the Brown Star Cluster. I talked him back down, and he'll be fine tomorrow. But
yeah,
he tells the funniest stories. They go into Baghdad going like 8 miles an hour. And he said, if you ever wanted to be nervous, and nothing ultimately happened to him. Nothing. They never got a shot fired at him. But in 2004, that was a goddamn miracle. But he was hilarious talking about it. But he's a good dude.
All right, brother.
All right, man. Have a good weekend.
I'll talk to you.
There you have it. Michael Musselman, another foodie. All food radio here on a Friday morning. That'll do it. The mother of all generators. We did it a second time, too. He did it again. Yeah. Downtown Baghdad. So, yeah. And I would say shit like, so, Mac, got any, and he'd be busting my balls. Mike, he goes, Mac, got any advice for me tomorrow going into Baghdad? I said, yeah, put your earplugs in, man. He said, thanks, I appreciate it. And then he was talking about driving into Baghdad and just people staring at him. He goes, it's like they wanted to shoot AKs out of their eyeballs at us. And then others were just, you know, were blown away by the sight of these monstrosity things. He said they probably thought they were bombs, which is probably why we didn't get shot at. Anyway, my thanks to Montana Man, Rob Schwartz, for coming on and talking about how higher headquarters works. You know, they don't give you missions that you can't do if they're worth a shit. Because they understand your readiness as well as you do, sometimes even better. So, don't touch that dial, you'll hear that. Then the All Marine Radio head chef joined us. We talked a little bit about marinades, shish kebab, and if you're a foodie, Paul Beaucoup passed away this week, and major force in food and in food on TV. So we had a little conversation about that and Kim's favorite TV food shows. So you'll hear that. And then the Gunner. We talked about everything from tattoos, Mike running for office, snake drinking, blood drinking. Let me... The snake blood story goes on. Mattis's polite applause for the members of the Indonesian Special Forces. You'll have to do way better than a King Cobra to impress a retired member of the U.S. Marine Corps. The annual Cobra Gold exercise conducted by U.S. and Thai forces are part training, part exotic buffet, as Marine Corps Times reported in February. Marines and sailors get a chance to suck down some hot cobra blood, among other delicacies, including spiders and scorpions. Quote, the snake blood is more of a local tradition. Marine Corporal Isaac Ibarra recounted of his own blood session in 2015. By some accounts, its effect is intended to instill bravery. Yeah. And then there's this whole series of pictures of people drinking blood. So you can find that at the Task and Purpose. They even have the video. I think that they have the video of... yeah, they do. This is the video. And these guys roll up, and they have these snakes. And they're one guy's ripping. One guy bites the head off and empties the blood. Then he walks over and gives the guy next to him some blood, and they start giving each other blood out of the snakes after they kill them. It's awesome. You can hear him scream. Yeah, let's do this shit. And then they double timed out. Blood snake blood all over the place. Come on, man. Who cares if it means anything? That shit's awesome. Dad, check it out. And I'll tell you what, he does, Madison's a Marine. He likes that stuff. He's a smart, smart guy. But he's got a streak of, let's do some dumb shit and have it be really fun in him, too. So, he keeps that under wraps, so. Anyway, have a great weekend. Let me tell you what's coming up next week. Pretty fired up, actually. On Monday, Ken Rogers is going to join us. He from KSON. On Tuesday, you'll hear the interview I did with, his name is Corporal Jerry Joes. And double amputee was hit by an 81 that was hooked to a tripwire as a member of Thundering 3rd Battalion, 1st Marine Regiment, Lima Company, as a matter of fact. And so since has had a twin brother that was also wounded in Vietnam and is now the president of the 1st Marine Division Association, talks about the challenges that those older organizations face as younger veterans stay connected by Facebook and don't really use those fraternal organizations anymore to socialize. And I think that's wrong. I think we all should go out and be members of, it's good to be part of the local presence in your community of the Marine Corps. And I think we need to grow, we need to do a little socializing of that. Like, it's great to be, like, you hear my friends, right? You heard two of them today. And I'll talk to them, you know, via text message all weekend, in conversations we'll have, and stupid stuff we'll say. And that's great, but I also think it's important to stay hooked in as a veteran, as a Marine, to the Marine Corps League and the detachments, and also, you know, associations like the 1st Marine Division Association. So important stuff to have a presence in your community locally, and when they do functions, get out and represent. So he'll join us Tuesday. On Wednesday, Nick War. He's a 1-5 guy from Vietnam. They're raising money for a Vietnam memorial at San Mateo, which is the headquarters of the 5th Marine Regiment. So you'll hear from Nick War. He's written a little bit of books. On Wednesday, I'm determined that Chris Bronzy is going to do his battle study, so I have to lean on him a little bit. And then on Thursday, you'll hear Mike Wilson, former Marine, wounded in Afghanistan, and he works for an organization called the Yellow Ribbon Fund. So you'll hear from him talking about caregiver support and the things that the Yellow Ribbon Fund does. So caregiver support, something you're going to hear more of here in the upcoming year, something that doesn't go away, something that we need to be mindful of and contribute to so that women who, they didn't volunteer, they didn't think when they were getting married they were going to be lifelong caregivers, and they are, so that they could be supported and be strengthened in terms of the way their lives change. So we're going to talk about that a little bit with Mike Wilson. And that's what the next week looks like. So pretty excited about it. Have a great weekend. This program repeats itself momentarily. On a Friday, All Marine Radio. Over and hold it, hold it, hold it. Out.